It is a day of mourning on the Locked On Nets podcast. Unfortunately, the Nets were eliminated from the playoffs by the Philadelphia 76ers last night, and myself and Marcus Barahal will have all that covered coming up on Locked On Nets. Let's get to it.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me is my man, my co-host, Marcus Barahal. And it's a bit of a somber, bittersweet podcast for us because, as I'm sure all of you know, and if you don't know, I'm actually a bit confused on your situation. The Brooklyn Nets were eliminated from the playoffs last night in pretty humiliating fashion. Just got beaten down completely by the Philadelphia 76ers. We're down 29 at halftime. Never really made it particularly close. Definitely a terrible way to go out after such a great, heartwarming season. But Marcus, we have to remember the good times. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the win in game one, the Kings comeback, the clinching win against the Pacers. There were definitely like a ton of great moments that I'm sure you and all the listeners will remember. I'll also remember. For a long time, but this last game, probably gonna forget that by tomorrow, I would say.
Yeah, don't be sad because it's over. Smile because it happened.
Wow, that's deep. Did you just come up with that?
No, it's like every every basic girl's Instagram caption.
Fair.
Yeah, I think high notes of the season for me. One, Philly, the win over Philly in game one of the playoffs. I'm trying to think what else. I think the win over the Lakers was really great. The Houston comeback comes to mind as really being a special win for the Nets as well. What else was there?
All-Star weekend was cool.
All-Star weekend. Both Denver wins.
Yeah.
And then also, I think underrated, the Cleveland triple overtime win.
I was just going to say that.
Going into the All-Star break, even though Cleveland's horrible, just like getting that win was so great for morale. And I remember I was in a hotel room in Sarasota just screaming at my computer as they battled tooth and nail with Marquise Chris and Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, two legends. So just the fact that they were able to pull that out is obviously miraculous and will be remembered for a while.
Yeah, and I don't know how you felt, but I was pretty I was just numb to everything after last night. You know, the Nets played them so close in game four. A couple calls, a couple missed shots didn't go their way, and they ended up losing that and just came out so flat in game five. I actually had to give in and buy myself a pair of AirPods today just because I needed something to cheer me up.
Wow, that's a nice luxury you have there.
All the podcast money.
Sure, yeah, we're raking it in.
We're raking in that dough.
Yeah, it felt like I think game four was really close, obviously. Even game three, the Nets were kind of like within striking distance for the whole time. So this was definitely a letdown, and I think that losing both those games at home, especially the way that game four ended, I think they were kind of like, the series is over. Like, they didn't really come out with a fight, which is not what you want to see, but it's hard to like not expect it at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, is it though? Because I feel like the Nets were the team throughout the year that always, you know, you look at that Kings game, look at that Houston game, they'd be down by 10 or 15 with a few minutes left, and they would just have these roaring comebacks. And to see them get beaten down so thoroughly from start to finish was pretty surprising and jarring, definitely in an elimination game. I don't know, I think with veterans like Dudley and even Ed Davis, though he wasn't playing, still a locker room presence, Damari, you'd think that these guys were going to be able to get up for this game just because, given the tension that's happened between these two teams all the time, even if it was 3-0, you'd still think that, given what happened in the previous game, that they'd be up and ready to go.
Yeah, I was still holding out hope, honestly. Like, even as crazy as it sounds, like at halftime when it was like a 29-point game, I was like, all right, I mean, this isn't that much crazier than like the deficit they had against the Kings. Like, we just saw the Clippers come back. I was like, maybe if they start the third quarter strong and can cut it to like under 20 within the first like 5 or 6 minutes, maybe there's a chance that they go on a run and at least make this interesting. And it was kind of the exact opposite. Like, Philly, I think, had a run to start the third quarter, and the Nets, I guess, wound up losing by only 22, but it felt like it could have been way, way more.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is like, after the first quarter, I was like, oh, this is a great joke. Like, they're going to have to get it together at some point.
Right.
And literally every NBA game, there's always a big comeback. So regardless of what happens, if a team can get up like 30-10, at some point, you know, it's going to be like a 7-point game. And then most of the time, the team that was winning the whole time gets on an 8-0 run or 11-2 run and puts them away. But there always is a run, and we're just waiting for it, but it never happened.
To be fair, Josh, the Nets did win the fourth quarter by 9 points, thanks to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. 9 of 13, 21 points. He hit a three. Shabazz Napier, 11 and 10. So
I'm very excited for
there was something there.
Yeah, I'm very excited for the Nets Daily article saying, can Rondae Hollis-Jefferson build off his fourth quarter performance and carry it over into next season? He's starting to develop a three-point shot.
Yeah, he was perfect from three in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it just like... it was just so demoralizing. D'Lo could not get anything going. He looked really bad. Joe Harris was just missing everything, just wide open looks. Besides LeVert, no one could do anything of use in the first half. And it was sad to see because Kenny, you know, without Ed Davis and kind of a lot of these other options he has just being so limited on the wing, you could feel it for him because he was trying everything. It just nothing was going to work.
Yeah, and... Russell was really bad, but like just watching, I joined the game a little bit late, but watching in the second quarter, I felt like the Nets had good looks and they just like weren't hitting them. Mm-hmm. Like Joe Harris had a ton of like open threes, either off curls or off spot ups. And D'Lo had his little floater, which has been so consistent this whole year, and they just weren't going down. So I know in the beginning it was like a lot of turnovers and sloppiness, but it felt like you said, it feels like there's always a run. And I thought that the Nets did have an opportunity in the second quarter to make a run, and they just couldn't get the shots to fall.
Yeah, there were a couple plays in particular. Joe Harris missing a wide open three. Damari Carroll having a back-to-back sequence where he missed an open layup under the basket, then follows it up with missing a wide open three. And at that point, it's just not going to be the Nets' night. And, you know, they're playing a team against Philly where the Nets weren't expected to win. You know, people thought they could push them to six or so. But when you look at Philly, they're just so much more talented on the front line. They have four players that you could argue... I think obviously Embiid's a no-brainer, but the other three are probably better than anyone else on the Nets. So when you have the four best players on one team in a series, it's actually kind of remarkable that the Nets were able to keep it as close as they did for most of the way.
Yeah, and obviously D'Angelo Russell is right up there with pretty much everyone besides Embiid, I think, on the Sixers, but he didn't really show up in this series, so we didn't get that guy. Caris LeVert was the Nets' best player in this series. Not to say that that is going to be the case going forward necessarily, but I think it's hard to argue that anyone other than Caris like showed up every game, basically. Dinwiddie was fine, but he didn't have a good game in Game 5. So
yeah, I thought Dinwiddie was good besides Game 5. I mean, he was pretty efficient scoring the basketball. And yeah, if you're a Nets fan, the one thing you take out of this series is saying, hey, you know, we need a lot more. We still need that top level star talent. We still need a lot more quality on the wing. We might need a bruising center type to match up with these Embiids to throw out there, just because Jared Allen and Ed Davis aren't going to get it done in a 7-game series. But, you know, Caris LeVert, a guy who struggled a lot after his injury, as expected, even though I, in particular, was very hard on him.
Really never be a big time player, you said.
Okay. That wasn't me. I was hacked. Sure. But he showed out this series, and I think he was really good. His 3-point shot looked a lot better, and he showed that he could be a go-to guy. So I'm definitely very high on his future, and I think between him, Dinwiddie, and D'Lo, you have to be bullish on those three guards, at least for the next regular season. If the Nets retain all three, you know, guard play wins games in this league in the regular season. I think you need wings that can play both sides of the ball in the playoffs. But definitely when you have three high-level guards like that, the Nets are going to be pretty well-served in making a return to the playoffs next year.
Yeah, I think for sure, kind of like regardless of how the offseason goes, I would expect them to be a playoff team again. And if they can like hit on some big free agents or something like that, they could maybe sneak into that like 4 or 5 seed, depending on how things shake out with free agents on other teams, obviously. But I think the future is still bright despite how this series ended.
Yep, absolutely. The future is bright. We just had some shadow for a night there. But you know what? We will survive. We're going to take a quick break. And then coming up, we will continue our discussion on what to look for this offseason for the Nets. We will now give a very short and probably uninformed at this point, because we're focusing so much on the playoffs, preview of the Nets offseason. But first, just want to say you can find Locked On Nets on the Himalaya podcast app, Spotify, Google Play, Apple, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We will be on there. And please subscribe, rate, and review. And when you get in your car, say, "Hey, Alexa, play podcast Locked On Nets," or any of our friends on the Locked On Podcast Network. That includes our boys over at Locked On Knicks, my guy Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw.
Your guy Alex Wolf first. I love it.
Wolfie. Marcus, so I guess we're going to turn our attention now to the NBA draft and free agency. And I think those are two things that in some cases even get publicized more than the playoffs, just because that's the NBA has become a 12-month-a-year sport. I know that it's a cliche and people get annoyed when Bill Simmons always says it, but he is right. So the Nets actually have three picks as of now in this draft. They have their own first round pick, which is at 17. They have the Nuggets first round pick number 27, which they got for taking on the Kenneth Faried contract. And then they also have 31, the Knicks second round pick, which is just like, I hope that person becomes a star. Like even more so than any other Nets draft pick that I want to become a great player. If it's coming from the Knicks, it's even more so. And Givony right now on the ESPN mock has them taking Nasir Little at 17, which would be amazing. He's a combo forward, played 1 year at UNC. He was projected to be a top five guy coming into this past season. I think there were some problems in terms of Roy Williams doesn't always want to play play young guys, even though Kobe White did have a nice season for them. Nasir Little also his best positions at the four, and Roy Williams likes to play two more traditional big man instead of going with a stretch four, but he definitely has a lot of potential and could be a nice fit for the Nets. They also have him taking Mfondu Kabanjile, who's a big man from FSU. I actually have seen him play before. He's kind of like a face-up guy, gets fouled a lot, has some makings of three-point range. He's pretty athletic, but also very, very raw and doesn't have much other skills besides scoring. And then Dylan Windler, who I'd heard of literally as the NCAA tournament started. He's a kind of a wing combo forward type from Belmont. Knockdown three-point shooter. Really good rebounder as well, average 21-11. But yeah, his main thing, his bread and butter is going to be three-point shooting. Shot seven threes a game as a senior and hit them at a 43% clip. So I'm sold on Dylan Windler. Are you?
Yeah, those numbers sound great. If I'm being honest, though, the only one of those three guys that I have heard of before this podcast is Nasir Little, so that would be nice if they got...
Windler's actually good.
I'm sure. I don't think that any of these guys are, like, scrubs or anything. I just, like, personally, I'm not a huge college basketball fan, but I will dive deep on these names. And I think that it's interesting that, like, all three of those guys are kind of in that, like, wing to, like, maybe bigger wing range that the Nets kind of have those holes at. So it might, like, in an ideal world, it's that you take the best player available and it also fills a positional need. So that would be big for the Nets if they can find help on the wing.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm curious how you think of the draft now, but I feel like just given how positional needs have changed in the NBA, like, it's not even best player available. It makes just so much more sense to just gamble on these wings, especially when you're kind of in that 17 to 30 range, because it is such a crapshoot. And wings are so much more valuable than these big men types. And you know that there are going to be guys like Bruno Fernando, Daniel Gafford, who are going to be good players in the NBA. But, like, they're just the centers, athletic centers who can roll to the rim, score around the basket, block a shot or two, are just a dime a dozen. And you might as well try to gamble on a wing where it's a lower probability, but if they hit, they could be a huge impact player, like a guy thinking of a Robert Covington, James Ennis, some of these guys we've seen pop up in the league the last few years where they've been taken in the second round or even been undrafted, and they've been huge contributors.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, there are guys like Mitchell Robinson for the Knicks who, like, get picked late, and even though they're a big man, they're still able to, like, make an impact and seem like they have a bright future. But I think for the most part, it makes sense to take a wing or a guard just because of the simple fact that, like, you're only playing one big man at a time and you're playing two or three wings at a time, and a point guard is obviously has the ball, usually is, like, the highest usage rate. So in terms of, like, maximizing the value, like, you're going to need more wings than you are big men. So it makes sense to take a shot there.
Yes, absolutely agree on that. And we'll dive deeper into the NBA draft. I'm a big draft guy, so
I'll get into it.
Yeah, you'll get into it. I'll my excitement will feed off on you.
Marcus, just like with the Mets.
Exactly. I'm going to be the draft guru. You're going to be the free agency guru. Give me some take, hot or not, lukewarm, fine. Anyone you think the Nets should go after, anyone that you're going to predict they're going to sign. Yeah, I'm just excited to hear what you have to say.
Sure. I mean, obviously there's like a ton of big names that are on the market this offseason. And there's a few guys that have like either been linked to the Nets or like rumored to be possibly going to the Nets. And I mean, there's guys like Kyrie Irving who are obviously great players, but I think that when you have D'Lo, possibly, I guess, if you bring him back, you have Dinwiddie and LeVert, I think it's a little bit of too much of an overlap there. So I think that like a guy like him or Kemba Walker, like even though they're great players, you probably don't want to bring that in. And so I think you do have to look at the wing. And so there's cheaper options, like relatively, in terms of like a guy like Chris Middleton or Tobias Harris, who maybe won't get like a full max, but will get like very close to it. And then there's obviously guys like Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. And so just thinking about those two specifically, I know KD has been linked to the Knicks a lot. He'd fit anywhere, but he'd be great in Brooklyn. And then a guy like Kawhi, I think, is kind of like an under the radar, like no one really knows what he's going to do just because he doesn't really talk. And like a lot of people are just assuming he's going to the Clippers. Pretty much no one, I think, that I've seen at least, has him going back to Toronto. And I think that there is a possibility with the Nets there. I remember there being talk about it when he was still with the Spurs at the end, where like there was some connection with his uncle, where there was something with the Nets there. And I think with Kenny Atkinson just coming from that Hawks background, which is like tied with the Spurs background, maybe there's some kind of connection there. I don't know. And I think I'd almost rather have him than KD with this team specifically, even though Durant is obviously the better player.
No.
I just think that like fit wise, in terms of personality, it's probably an easier fit.
I mean, fit-wise, sure, but also it's like that's like say, I mean, Durant can fit anywhere. We're looking at him right now.
No, I know. I'm not saying I don't want Kevin Durant. Right. I think it's.
I feel
more
like
just
that's
that,
saying, like, oh, Nets, like Middleton's a cleaner fit than LeBron.
No, because Kawhi is on like a much higher level than a Chris Middleton type, and I think that Durant is obviously better offensively, and I think Kawhi is better defensively. Even though Durant is obviously very good, the Nets need help on the wing, and I think KD is almost better guarding these like four like power forward types. He can't really guard smaller guys, and I think Kawhi's defensive versatility could really help the Nets. Obviously it could help anyone. I mean, if you can get either of these guys, you get them is the bottom line. But
yeah, but yeah. Also imagine Durant playing the four for the Nets. They'd be unstoppable offensively.
Oh yeah, they'd score like 140 a game.
And, you know, they'd also have to, I don't know, I feel like Durant, if over anything, that's like the dream scenario that I just don't, I can't get my hopes up on, because I think it's so low probability, but who knows, he's a very mercurial guy, so he could take a liking to this Nets team. I know that he works out with LeVert. They call LeVert baby Durant, according to Basketball Reference.
Yeah.
So who knows.
Yeah, and I think that the Nets, like culture wise they've like kind of made a real like mark on the league, and I think players recognize that they have like a good environment, good system, good staff, good practice facility, all that stuff. And yeah, I just think even like Jimmy Butler's comments about Caris LeVert being like a great player and someone who other guys in the league are kind of like looking at as like one of the next generation.
Who's got
like
next.
Like, yeah, who's got next, basically. I think that that's big, and I think that they'll get somebody. I just don't know who it is yet.
Right. Would you fire Sean Marks or demote him for Rich Kleiman if him and Durant coming to the Nets?
I don't know. I don't know if Rich Kleiman would go take a fine by going into the referee's room like Sean Marks did. I don't know.
True. Yeah, he's. I don't know. I feel like he's pretty fiery. He'd just go directly on the Simmons podcast if he wanted to voice his displeasure.
I was gonna say, actually, if there's one thing I know about Rich Kleiman, is that he loves to interject. So actually, he probably would do this. So
interject.
Maybe I would.
He wants to make himself the star of the show. We're gonna take our final break, and then coming up, we will wrap up our quick free agency preview and then give some final thoughts on the season that was. Marcus, I want to also, I think, listen, star player is definitely a big need for the Nets, but also I think we need someone with a little bit more heft to go up against these Joel Embiid types. And I was browsing through the free agent center list for this upcoming offseason. And two people that I want to highlight. Actually, no, three, because I just found someone else.
Oh, wow.
One, Boban. He killed the Nets. Now he should join them.
I like it.
I like that. I feel like he would add a nice element. He has the nice mid-ranger as well. Then Mr. Chop Cheese, Kyle O'Quinn.
Yes.
Bring him back to New York. Get him going to all of the bar and bat mitzvahs. Get him back on the circuit. I feel like that he would really take a liking to that. I feel like the Indiana Jewish preteen kind of circuit isn't as robust as is in New York. So
Brooklyn especially.
I know. He would really need to – he kind of needs to revamp his social life.
Yeah, this could be a great opportunity for him to, like, meet some new people. So yeah, definitely support it.
Yeah. Is he married? Does his wife come to these things?
I don't know. I have no clue, actually.
And then, yeah, we'll look into that for next podcast.
I'll look it up as you talk here.
Yeah. And then third, just scrolling through, how about Salah Mejri, a.k.a. Big Salah from Dallas the last few years? I forget his nationality, but he is somewhere
I think he's Tunisian.
Yes, he's Tunisian. Okay.
Kyle O'Quinn is also not married.
Okay, his bachelor. Maybe he finds one of these like single parents at these bar bat mitzvahs or friend of the family. They set him up, meet cute at the mitzvah.
Could happen. Yeah, maybe Amari Stoudemire knows somebody in the area.
Yeah,
who's to say?
It's a big mitzvah in Jewish culture to set two people up that get married. So maybe.
Oh, really?
I forget who Kyle O'Quinn's agent was that was having these him go to these things, but I could really see that person just trying to set Kyle O'Quinn up with anyone. What do you think of those three? Do you like the best and which do you like the least?
I like O'Quinn a lot. I loved him when he was with the Knicks, and he just seems like an Ed Davis type, like a guy who doesn't mind coming off the bench, doesn't mind scrapping for rebounds and kind of doing all the little things to make the team better. And he will fight inside. He's like not the tallest, but he, similar to Ed, he just kind of like grinds. So I think that would be a good guy to bring in. Salah Mejri, I've never been a huge fan of. Just something about him. I don't know. Just the way he plays, I think he's like a little elbowy. I think he plays like he gets rebounds and he's kind of turning, which I guess when he's on your team, maybe you don't mind it as much. And then who was the first guy you mentioned? I already forgot.
Boban.
Boban, yes. Very pro Boban, or Proban, as we say, in the biz. He's great, I think, especially because when you have Jared Allen, you're probably only going to want to play Boban maybe like 15 to 20 minutes. So I think that's when he's at his best. He could be good for sure. And I don't know if Philly would necessarily be bringing him back. Maybe we get him and Tobias Harris. You know, they've kind of been together for a while now. So maybe that's like a package deal.
I like that. I feel like Boban, the thing is, it's tough because I don't want to cast aside Ed Davis because I love Ed Davis. I just want someone that you can bring in breaking case of emergency style. And I feel like O'Quinn fits that because right now he was backing up Miles Turner and Sabonis in Indiana. So would you rather back up two people in Indiana or two people in New York? Clearly New York. And then Mejri, he gets no playing time on Dallas. Yeah. So I feel like bring him
but
in.
But at the same time, I think there might be a reason for that.
No, he's not that bad. He can defend the rim a little bit. He's huge.
He's okay. What do you think about, I just saw this guy's name. I have no clue what kind of contract he's going to get. DeAndre Jordan? I have no idea what he's going to get in the offseason. He's a free agent.
Yeah, I feel like he's that guy that's going to be expecting a lot and then just isn't going to get much. I think he can maybe get like a two-year, $10 million deal. But I just don't know. Like, I feel like Phoenix is going to throw money at him to back up DeAndre Ayton.
Interesting. The double DeAndre.
Yeah. And then whoever their new coach is going to get yelled at by Sarver to play them together. But yeah, I don't think he's going to get more than like $5 million per year, but I definitely don't see him as a fit on the Nets just because I've heard he is a decent locker room guy and people like him, right?
I think he's been good with the Knicks, and I think especially with like mentoring Mitchell Robinson from what I've heard.
But I feel like he's not going to be at this stage of his career, he's not going to want to kind of be just a primary backup and just solely mentor.
Yeah, I think that was just because he was like getting paid so much and it was only for like a third of the season basically. Right. So he's like, all right, I'll just suck it up and then next year I'll
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. But I think that the center thing is something that the Nets are gonna have to address because even though it's not gonna happen in as many cases, it is important just to have a guy that can stop people like an Embiid.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I remember you and I talked about it around the trade deadline or like buyout time about whether the Nets should, because they had like an empty roster spot for a while, if they should bring in like a third center just to kind of have. And I remember you thought that it was a good idea, and I was kind of like, oh, I don't know, it doesn't really seem necessary. Like with Jared Allen, with Ed Davis, you kind of have all you need. But then obviously once Ed got hurt, the hole was like glaringly obvious, and you can't really have Rondé in that role, I think, next year. Like, I would be surprised if he's even on the team, honestly.
Yeah, is he your person on the team that's most likely just to not be here next year?
Yeah, I think so. The longest tenured net, so it is sad, but, and he did have a couple moments, like that Kings comeback, he was really good down the stretch in that game, but it's too much, like, hit and miss, and he's just taking too much off the table, I think.
Yeah, I just don't even know who's going to, like, throw him an offer sheet. Because I feel like it's going to be a team that with not a smart GM that's like, oh, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson's like really good, or at least like a wing with potential, and he's just not that.
Yeah, it has to be someone who just like wasn't watching the last year or two.
Yeah, also I feel like, how do you feel about Damari Carroll? Do you think his Nets tenure is going to come to an end? Is he going to go to a team that's going to be in contention right away, or do you think he'll take a small deal to come back? Because he really was a big letdown this playoff series.
Yeah, I don't know why he was so disappointing at it. I don't know if maybe he got tired from playing a ton of minutes or something, but it felt strange because I thought he had been really consistent like since mid-January. But I could definitely see him bouncing back and like playing 10 or 15 minutes for like a Rockets or a team like that. But yeah, I could see him on the Nets still.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And I feel like especially Kenny really likes him just because they have that whole Atlanta connection. So he might just say, hey, Sean, just, you know, give this one. We'll try to get some upgrades on the wing just so Damari doesn't have to play as big of a role. But he's a good guy to have around. And you know that there are games where he can get hot and win it for you. Just play solid two-way ball.
Yeah, and he's got a great style off the court. So you can't really replace that.
Always. You can't replace style. And we can't replace this Nets season. It was a really good one. Thank you, Nets, as we always like to say. They made this one an incredible ride. It definitely was one to remember with Gavin's departure, Marcus stepping in, the team getting very hot and having a really nice end to the season. Marcus, I don't know about you, but when you and I first linked up together to do the podcast, I definitely was not expecting such a wild ride. And for the Nets to be able to have this season with so many highs, All-Star weekend, some of these great comebacks, making the playoffs, even when it looked a bit touch and go for those last few games of the year, and giving us at least a somewhat competitive first round series, I couldn't have asked for anything better.
Yeah, I mean, when I started doing the podcast with you like 5.5 months ago, it felt like the season would kind of be over in like early March, and here we are, it's almost May, and the Nets just finished the season, so definitely a success, and I like can't wait to get watching next season already. Hurry up.
Exactly. Hurry up quickly. Any last thoughts on the NBA playoffs, the rest of it? I know that most of us have been focusing on the Nets series, but you are a man that has a keen eye for what's happening elsewhere in the league.
Yeah, there's this Damian Lillard guy. He's pretty good. I think he's the second best point guard in the NBA. That's my thought. I'll leave it at that.
And so that's with not counting Harden as a point guard?
Yeah, exactly. It's not exactly a hot take. I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, I think he's really cemented himself as better than Kyrie. I think everyone knows he's better than Kemba, definitely better than Chris Paul at this point. But yeah, I mean,
wow, you didn't even mention Westbrook. Westbrook. That was incredible.
I forgot about him. I mean, he just got owned by Dame. Yeah, I mean, to have two series ending buzzer beaters in your career is really crazy.
It's literally also really cool. Yeah. I mean, there was like a great tweet thread. I can't remember who tweeted it out, but I think Bill Simmons retweeted it, and it was just like the fact that I think there's only been six ever series-ending buzzer beaters like that, and Lillard has two of them. He's the only guy with two, so yeah. Crazy.
I think that's my favorite play. I've like watched the replay of him hitting the three to beat the Rockets over Chandler Parsons like probably 20 times in my life. It's such a great shot.
It's the last time Chandler Parsons was in the NBA. It's tough.
No, it wasn't. He was in there this season.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Come on, he's the man. He's still going to have his comeback. I'm a Chandler Parsons fan.
I know you are, yeah.
And appreciate you all sticking with us for this season. We are going to be taking a step back with our coverage coming up, but we're still going to be very active getting you podcasts to discuss the NBA playoffs, the preview of what the Nets offseason could look like, draft talk, all that good stuff. And we'll get some guests on, hopefully, over these next few months as well to get us through the abyss until hope springs eternal with Summer League. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JM Bass _. Again, you can find us on Himalaya Podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, be well.
Bye.